In fact, yesterday, in the Indian Ocean, and we'll play it on the screen there, an American submarine sunk an Iranian warship that thought it was safe in international waters. Instead, it was sunk by a torpedo.
NATO is there to protect us collectively against any adversary, be it Russia or whoever, or terrorism. But also it is a platform for the United States to project power on the world stage. Because this whole operation now, this whole campaign in Iran, needs these basing requests to be positively engaged with by NATO allies, as they are doing, making use of key assets here in Europe. So the fact that we stick together, the United States and Europe and Canada, is crucial also for the success of this American-Israeli campaign.
This is my video update on this Thursday midday, March the 5th, coming to you from Limassol, Cyprus. Let's talk about some news. And let's start things off with Pete Hegseth and his press conference, along with Raisin Kane, as Trump calls him. And they gave an update on the conflict, the war with Iran. And Pistol Pete, he was unhinged, completely unhinged. He said some crazy stuff during this this press conference. He was talking about how the U.S. military is going to hit Iran. Even when they're down, they're going to smash Iran because it's all about winning. He talked about death and destruction. He was talking like a maniac, Pete Hegseth. A very unfortunate press conference from the Secretary of War, from a top official of the United States of America. A very, very unfortunate press conference. Just tell the American people what's going on with the war in a professional manner. There's no need to talk about death, destruction, hitting them while they're down. He talked about how the U.S. military, they took out the Iranian who was planning to assassinate Trump. I don't even know what they're talking about anymore with this whole Iran-Trump assassination thing, which never happened. Never happened. Butler, Pennsylvania was not Iran. But he said that. And then he took a victory lap for sinking an Iranian ship in the Indian Ocean. And this Iranian ship was not a combat ship. It was not in combat. It had no ammunition because it was invited to India along with 200 crew members to take part in a ceremony. It was a guest of the Indian government. A non-combat ship, which was sunk by a U.S. submarine. So the whole thing was premeditated. The U.S. knew exactly what this ship was doing in India. They knew it was not a combat ship. They knew it had no ammunition. They knew it was taking part in a ceremony invited by the Indian government. And they went to the Indian Ocean. The submarine made its way to the Indian Ocean and decided to sink this ship. And my understanding is that all 200 crew members died. That's my understanding of it. I'm not sure if there were any survivors. Sri Lanka actually came to the assistance of this ship. We're starting to get statements from India, from various people in India who are very, very angry at this incident, pointing out that this is embarrassing, a humiliation, completely wrong for India to invite Iran to this ceremony, and then for the United States to know that this ship is there and then to sink this ship. And the worst part is that Pete Hegseth was actually proud of this. What are you proud of? What are you freaking proud of? He thought this was some sort of act of strength. He was talking about this is about how this is the first time a submarine has sank a ship since World War II or something like that. What are you talking about? Psycho. It was there to attend a ceremony 5,000 freaking miles away, or 2,000 or 3,000 freaking miles away, without any weapons on board. I couldn't believe what I was watching. The Secretary of War taking a victory lap for sinking an unarmed, no ammo ship that was participating in a peaceful event invited by India. So here is what Hegseth said during the press conference. The Iranian vessel had thought it was safe in international waters. Instead, it was sunk by a torpedo. Quiet death, Hegseth stated, adding that the incident marked the first sinking of an enemy ship by a torpedo since World War II. It thought it was safe. Yeah, it thought it was safe because it was invited to this event, to this ceremony. It was not in combat. Absolutely, it thought it was safe. So let me get this straight, at Secretary of War. You just sank an Iranian frigate which was returning from an international naval exercise in India, near Sri Lanka. In other words, you attacked an unsuspecting enemy ship in international waters, thousands of nautical miles from the combat zone in the Middle East. You know who conducted such cowardly attacks on unsuspecting naval targets before you? Nazi Germany. Cowardly act, yeah. It was a cowardly act. He should be fired. He should be fired, no doubt about it. But he won't be. And this should not be cheered on. No one should be cheering this on. It was wrong in every possible way what they did to that ship, sinking that ship. So the foreign minister of Iran, Arachi, posted on X, the U.S. has perpetrated an atrocity at sea 2,000 miles away from Iran's shores. Forget Dena, a guest of India's Navy carrying almost 130 sailors, was struck in international waters without warning. Mark my words, the U.S. will come to bitterly regret precedent it has set. 130 sailors, not 200. This is an awful precedent that the U.S. is setting. So the press secretary, Levitt, she also spoke to the media. That press conference was also a train wreck because the Trump administration, they can't get their messaging down when it comes to the Iran war. People are still asking, what are we doing in Iran? What's the goal of this war? Why are we in a war with Iran? What was the decision that took us to war in Iran? Are we fighting a war on Israel's behalf? is Trump a weakling and he will do anything that Netanyahu tells him to do? And the Trump administration just can't seem to get their messaging straight. Actually, the Telegraph has an article with the title, Why Trump Can't Get His Story Straight on Iran. And so Levitt was asked about why. Why are we at war with Iran? Why is the United States at war with Iran? And Levitt said that the president had a feeling, again, based on fact, that Iran was going to strike the U.S. I'm not making this up. That was her response to the reporter's question. So we already know what Rubio said about why the United States is at war with Iran. I've talked about that in my past couple of videos. And according to Levitt, the president of the United States had a feeling based on fact. It was the feels. He had the feels, the feeling based on fact. And that's what has taken the United States into this war. Trump's feelings. I had a feeling. Oh boy, Trump. So he was asked about how the war is going. And Trump said, on a 10-point scale, I'd rate this a 15. Really, Trump? You would rate this a 15? Okay. So, The U.S. military, the CENTCOM, they're talking about how they are destroying Iran's missile launching capabilities. Actually, Hegseth and Kane, they painted a very optimistic picture during their press conference. They basically said that within a week, the United States and Israel... apartment and studio for rent. The United States and Israel will control the airspace over Iran, and they will be able to bring death and destruction. So they said that will happen in 1 week's time. And then Kane, he talked about how Iran's fighting capabilities are pretty much gone. They are being degraded. And then he put out some statistics about how Iran's missile launches have been decreasing day by day. And he believes by next week, Iran will not be capable of launching any missiles, and they're hunting down. They continue to hunt down whatever missile launchers are left. And so CENTCOM, they posted on X, while the Iranian regime indiscriminately targets civilians with missiles and drones, U.S. forces continue to aggressively hunt and destroy Iranian missile launchers with precision. And they showed a video of what they thought was a missile launcher being destroyed. But when you look at that video closely, and the analysts on X and Telegram, they took a close look at this video of what CENTCOM is saying was an Iranian missile launcher being hunted down and destroyed. What actually was hit was a drawing, a painting, a drawing, a decoy of a missile launcher. And so the United States is wasting its weapons destroying painted decoys. From Armchair Warlord, CENTCOM is either trolling us with their comedy decoy strike reel from the last 24 hours of operations, or this is the best they've got and the war is going south in a hurry. The SA-2 apologetically falling off its welded up launch rail instead of exploding is chef's kiss. Yeah, all these decoys are being destroyed, but CENTCOM is posting this as proof that launchers, that these are real launchers that are being destroyed. So the question is CENTCOM trolling everybody, or do Or do they actually believe that, at least in this instance, they're destroying launchers? So Rutte, the NATO CEO, he gave an interview yesterday, and the NATO CEO talked about how Article 5 may come into play. It might be time for Article 5. Article 5 for me? Podolyak? Article 5 for me? No, Mr. President, no. No, for Iran, Podolyak. Yeah, Article 5 for Iran, not for Project Ukraine. Why would Article 5 come into play? The United States and Israel attack Iran, but Article 5 is going to be initiated. Doesn't sound like an Article 5 event, but if the U.S. wants NATO involved, NATO will get involved, right? Mark Carney is saying that Canada might get involved, which means that Canada's going to get involved. Mark Carney said, well, we're thinking about it. We're now thinking about getting involved. When a leader of a country says that, starts hinting about or the possibility is open for some sort of military involvement, it's going to be defensive. We're just going to be assisting the United States. That's when you know they're going to get involved. So we have that news as well. And the Financial Times ran a story talking about how the U.S. Pentagon is in talks to buy Ukrainian-made interceptors to fend off attacks by Iranian drones. Pentagon eyes Ukrainian interceptor drones to counter Iran. That is coming from the Financial Times. Ukrainian made. It's a good one. Yeah, okay. Ukrainian made. Yeah, we believe you. Ukrainian made from Texas. Ukrainian made drones sent from Texas. Flamingo missiles assembled in the UAE. British Flamingo missiles designed in the UAE, assembled in Denmark. Ukrainian-made Flamingo missiles. Okay, whatever. Whatever. iPhone designed in California, made in China. So Trump sells weapons to NATO. NATO gives weapons to Ukraine. Trump buys weapons from Ukraine. It's brilliant, actually. It's genius when you think about it. Ah, that washing machine. It is spinning, spinning, spinning. Podolyak, we sell our drones back to Trump. I like it. I like it a lot, that washing machine spinning. Oh, boy. If you don't laugh, you cry. No doubt about that. We are sports. So that was an interesting story. As Hegseth and Kane were giving their military update, they showed a map of all of the targets that they have hit. And Drop Site News, they picked up on the fact that one of the targeted areas that they were showing, Hegseth and Raisin Kane, that's Trump's nickname for General Kane. He calls him Raisin because he likes raisins. Raisin, as in raisin, tearing down, destroying. Everything's about destruction, right? So it's Raisin Kane. Would be better if he called him Raisin Kane because he likes raisins, but nope. It's about death and destruction. It's always about death and destruction. So one of the areas that they showed, which had been decimated by the U.S. military in the first 4 or 5 days, was Manab. And Drop Site News picked this up. big strike in the area of Manab, which is the elementary school, which saw 160, 170 girls killed. So the Senate had a vote to see about Trump's power to wage this war, to continue to wage this war, and the Senate rejected the bid to scale back the Iran war. 47 to 53, the vote was pretty much split along party lines. Rand Paul, he voted with the Democrats in this instance so that they can put a check on U.S. President Trump to not give him a blank check to continue to wage this war and shift things back to Congress the way it should be. But Rand Paul, he sided with the Democrats, but Fetterman, he sided with the Republicans to give Trump the power, the blank check, to continue this war. So that's the update on that vote. 47 to 53, vote split largely along party lines, with Republican senators united to defeat a measure that would have required congressional approval to continue the operation. Yeah, Congress approving war, come on. That's so 1820s. Congress approving war, come on. We can't have none of that, right? Rand Paul, one of the good guys. So I can just go down here, huh? Usually this is closed off. Anyway, so how big is Iran? How big is Iran? It is massive. Iran is massive. We have the talk about some sort of a ground invasion using the Kurds. That'll be the first phase of the ground invasion as the United States levels Tehran, and that is what they are doing. They are absolutely leveling Tehran. They want to get it to the point where it is so degraded that they can then move in troops, or the first wave of troops. And the reports are that the first wave of troops will be Kurds. It's always the Kurds. And then the United States will betray the Kurds, but that'll happen after. The land, Iran, the territory, the country, it's absolutely massive. I've read reports talking about a Kurdish army with U.S. funding, with CIA funding, weapons ready to go, which numbers in the thousands, 5,000, 10,000. I might even be generous there with the 10,000 number. But those are what the reports are saying with regards to the Kurds and moving them into Iran. But it's a huge country. Zero Hedge had a really good article talking about Iran's size, visualizing Iran's vast size and why any ground invasion means years-long quagmire. Yeah, Hegseth said this conflict could take 2 weeks. He said it could take 4 weeks. It could take 8 weeks. Politico ran an article saying that the Pentagon is preparing for a 100 days war, and they're also making plans for the war to go on up to September. You heard me right, September. 100 days, and maybe even all the way to September. And they're getting staff in place. They're hiring. They're hiring staff to prepare for what will eventually be a long war, a war of attrition. Kane said that the United States is ready. He also said that the United States has unlimited weapons, unlimited missiles, unlimited bombs. They can wage this war for as long as it takes. They're using that one again, as long as it takes. Where have I heard that one? As long as it takes, as long as it takes. Sounds familiar. I just can't remember where I heard that one before. But Iran is massive. It's about twice the size of Ukraine, according to Zero Hedge. It's actually the same. It's a similar size to Alaska. It's a similar size to Alaska, according to Zero Hedge. much bigger than Texas. You put Iran into the United States. You put it smack in the middle of the United States. It's pretty much the entire central USA. That's pretty much Iran from Texas all the way up. And you pretty much have Iran. So you're talking about a huge country. A ground invasion is going to mean hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of troops. And even if Iran were to collapse, even if the government were to collapse, which I don't know, how is that even possible when you have this mosaic decentralized setup? How do you collapse something that's decentralized? But let's just say it collapses and you get all kinds of chaos, fragmentation. If you're thinking of securing this size of territory, you are going to need millions of troops. It's amazing how big the landmass of Iran. So in Iran, if you put Iran inside of Europe, it's like four or five European countries, like France and like three or four other European countries all put together. That's how big Iran is. So that's my segue into Europe and how the EU is absolutely screwed when it comes to gas and to energy. They are screwed. Qatar yesterday announced that they will be shutting their gas liquefaction. They're going to shut it down. They're not going to stop it. They're now shutting the whole thing down. And what that means is that once they shut it down, if they want to start it up again, it's going to take 2 weeks to start, and then it will take an additional 2 weeks to get that gas to the level where it was before the shutdown. So you could be looking at a total of 4 weeks. Today, if they shut it down today and say they restart it tomorrow, then it's going to take them 4 weeks. And remember what Bloomberg said yesterday, what JP Morgan is reporting, what Goldman Sachs is reporting. Europe can ride this thing out for about 25 days, this gas energy crisis. But any more than 25 days and the European economy is in big freaking trouble. So we could be looking at Qatar being shut down for 4 weeks starting today or tomorrow. And that's if they restart it right away, which they're not, because this is going to be a long conflict. So what does Europe do with gas? What does it do for gas? Now it's 100% dependent, pretty much dependent on US LNG. What I'm waiting for is for Trump to say, we're at war. No LNG. No LNG exports. No energy exports. We need the energy because the United States is in a conflict. I'm waiting for Trump to make that announcement. And when he makes that announcement, the only option left for Europe is ring, ring, Putin. Hey, can we come to Moscow and maybe talk about Nord Stream again? That's where it's going to go. That is exactly where this is going to go. From Bloomberg, Russian oil cargoes swing back to India as Iran war hits supply. Yeah, so India is going to stock up. We know that China has stocked up and continues to stock up on oil and gas and energy. India is now going to stock up. China announced that they're not going to be exporting any fuel from their refineries. No more fuel. We need to hold on to whatever we have. So no exports there. The Financial Times is reporting that the Strait of Hormuz is pretty much shut down. They actually put out a chart showing the reduction in shipping through the Strait of Hormuz. You can see the chart right now on your screen. And Russian President Vladimir Putin, he was meeting with Peter Szijjártó, the foreign minister of Hungary, and they're going to talk about how they can help Hungary with energy needs. I don't know how they'll be able to do it, but they talked about that. And then Putin said, you know what? Given the situation, with the war in the Middle East, maybe we have to look at cutting off whatever energy, gas supplies make their way to Europe. Russia may halt exports earlier than stipulated by the EU's sanctions restrictions. Yeah, so the EU was talking about cutting off Russia. The EU was going to cut off Russia by 2027, right? And they were bragging about it, and they were celebrating its energy independence, energy freedom, energy diversification. And now Putin is coming along and saying, you know, because of the war, maybe we need to cut off whatever energy is being sent to Europe. Let's think about cutting off our exports to the EU. That is going to be disastrous. Disastrous outcomes for the EU. And we had news that Germany's Rosneft operating in Germany. I thought Germany had illegally seized the Rosneft subsidiary. I believe they did, and they still control this subsidiary that they stole from Russia. Anyway, this stolen subsidiary, controlled or managed by Germany, the U.S. is going to exempt Rosneft's German unit from sanctions indefinitely. So it looks like Merz went to D.C. and he got Trump to exempt Rosneft from Russian sanctions, from Russian oil and energy sanctions, in the hopes that Russia is going to send oil to this German Rosneft subsidiary. Is that the plan from Merz? But now Putin is saying, we're going to probably have to cut all our energy exports to Europe. That would also include Rosneft. Now that Rosneft is exempt from sanctions, Putin is saying, yeah, well, that kind of doesn't matter anymore, because we're just not going to send energy your way. So things are looking bad for the EU, for Europe. So Turkey intercepted, they claim they intercepted an Iranian missile. And the reports were that Iran is now targeting Turkey, or this was a missile that misfired or something along those lines. And then we got the reports from Turkey that they were then in discussions with Iran. And Turkey came out with a statement and said, no, that missile was on its way to Cyprus. And it happened to land in Turkey. So I don't know what's going on there. A lot of fog of war. When it comes to Cyprus, the White House, the United States has issued, the State Department has issued a travel warning. Caution if you are thinking, be cautious if you are thinking of traveling to Cyprus, because the conflict is expanding, the war in the Middle East is expanding, and you also have a lot of flight difficulties in the entire region. So they sent out a travel warning for the island that I am currently on, Limassol, Cyprus, and Spain. Let's talk about Spain. We have an update on Trump's epic fury when it comes to Spain. Carolyn Leavitt, she said that after Trump's statements yesterday about Spain, with Merz sitting right next to him, that Spain took note of Trump's frustration and anger and disappointment with Spain. And she said that, look at all the ships. She said that Spain has now changed its mind. It has reversed course, and it will now be working with the United States. It will open up its air bases to the United States, is what Carolyn Leavitt said in her press statements. The problem is that Spain came out right away refuting these claims from Carolyn Leavitt. Leavitt said Madrid had heard Trump's message loud and clear and was now coordinating action with Washington. Spanish Foreign Minister José Luis Álvarez rejected that claim. I categorically deny this, Álvarez said in an interview on Spain's Cadena Ser Radio Network. Spain's position on the war in the Middle East, on the attack on Iran, on the use of our bases, has not changed. That is the statement from Spain. What is going on with the White House messaging? What is going on with the White House's freaking messaging? How can Carolyn Leavitt make a statement like this? And then right away, that's how you know that Spain is telling the truth. They didn't wait a day or two. Right away, the foreign minister comes out and says no. So he said something else, Álvarez. Here we go. He also showed his disappointment and anger with Mertz. Spain is very disappointed with BlackRock Mertz because BlackRock Mertz was sitting next to Trump and he was just letting Trump bash Spain. And Mertz said nothing. He actually sided with Trump in the United States. I talked about this in my video update yesterday. He sided with Trump and threw Spain under the bus. Spain, the EU partner, the EU ally of Germany. Solidarity, European Union style. BlackRock Mertz style. And Spain did not like it. So Álvarez, he said, when you share a currency, a common trade policy, and a common market with another country, you expect solidarity, in reference to Mertz and Germany. I can't imagine Angela Merkel or Olaf Scholz making statements like that. There was a different pro-European spirit then, Álvarez said. No, I disagree with you, Álvarez. I think you're way, way off. Way, way off. It was the same with Merkel. It was the same with Olaf Scholz. Definitely Olaf Scholz. For God's sakes, Olaf Scholz was standing next to Biden when Biden got the question about Nord Stream, and Olaf Scholz said nothing. And that wasn't even about Spain. That was about Germany. We're going to blow up. We're going to stop Germany's energy transit from Russia. How are you going to do that, Mr. President Biden? Olaf Scholz standing next to Biden, and Biden said, we're going to do it. Olaf Scholz said nothing. He said nothing. So no, the situation was exactly the same back then. Anyway, that's an update there with Spain. And one more story, and we'll get to our clown world. And we go to a Russian LNG tanker that was attacked by a Ukrainian drone. Not in the Black Sea, everybody, but right off the coast of Malta. An LNG tanker, an LNG tanker. Think about that. We have a huge energy crisis that's unfolding right now, and it's going to get a whole lot worse. And Ukraine is attacking an LNG tanker, a Russian LNG tanker, not in the Black Sea, but off the coast of Malta. And the reports are that this attack was a drone launched from Libya. In a statement on Wednesday, the ministry confirmed the raid on the Russian-flagged Arctic Metagas vessel, which had been en route from Murmansk with cargo processed according to all international rules. When Ukrainian unmanned boats launched from the Libyan coast struck the vessel, all 30 Russian crew members abandoned the ship and were saved thanks to a rescue operation mounted by Russian and Maltese emergency services off the coast of Libya. Now, how is Ukraine operating off the coast of Libya? That is a bunch of bollocks. Bollocks, I'm calling it right now. Bollocks, bollocks, and more bollocks. This was not Ukraine. And everyone knows this was not Ukraine. This was NATO. This was maybe France. We're talking Libya. France comes to mind, right? Sarkozy, Libya, Hollande, UK comes to mind, Cameron, Libya, the United States comes to mind, Hillary Clinton, we came, we saw, he died. This was not Ukraine. That's my guess. I don't have any facts, but I have a feeling. I have a feeling, as Trump says. I have a feeling that the Dow is over 50,000. I have a feeling. I have a feeling that this was not Ukraine that hit this LNG tanker. So let's do a clown world and we can wrap this video up. And we'll start off with stunning and brave Kaya Kallas, once again making the clown world segment. And she gave her thoughts on the conflict in the Middle East, what is unfolding in the Middle East. And Kallas said there's a couple of negatives with the conflict in the Middle East. One negative is that it is pulling attention away from Project Ukraine. She said that's a bad thing. The other negative is that it is pulling away weapons from Project Ukraine, weapons that Ukraine needs. She said that is also a very bad thing. But then Kallas said there is one positive. There is one positive, according to Stunning and Brave, and that is that Russia has lost another ally. She said that's a positive.
That it's diverting attention away. And that's why today also we had this meeting that we can't let it slip off the table, because this is the real and very close threat to Europe. Of course, also what is worrying is that all these capabilities that are needed in the Middle East are also needed in Ukraine. So all, you know, the production we need to speed up because there is more need. And we really need to deal with this. And also the attention away from the negotiations to actually achieve peace. What is maybe a positive side is that Russia has lost another ally in this this war. So I think this is positive, but we need to also move with the maritime services ban, because the oil price raise in oil prices is also helping Russia to fund the war.
An energy crisis, an economic, global, financial meltdown. But Russia is losing another ally, so that's a good thing, says Stunning and Brave. So Glenn Beck, he is making the case for war with Iran. He's advocating on the side of the Trump administration. And in order to make his case, he brought on an AI version of George Washington. I'm not making this up. So Glenn Beck, a former Fox News Glenn Beck, he's interviewing AI George Washington. And the thing is a train wreck. It's slop. It looks really bad and it looks really stupid. And if this is our future, when it comes to journalism or when it comes to trying to make a case for or against a conflict, or trying to do any kind of analysis of anything, if we're going to start bringing in historical figures using AI, well, then I want none of it. I want none of it, man. Boy, did it look bad. Very, very stupid. Lithuania said that forget Article 5. They're not going to wait for Article 5. They told the United States that if they want assistance in the war with Iran, Lithuania is ready. Good to know. Lithuania is ready to send their two soldiers, their entire military, which consists of two soldiers. They're ready to send them. Go for it, Lithuania. Send them. Send them to Iran. So that was their statement. And then we finally have the best for last for today's clown world. Vovon and Lexus. They prank called Fresh Prince of Langley, Reza Pahlavi. They prank called the Fresh Prince, and they were some German government official, complete with the hairstyle, the mustache. I mean, my God, how could you not have seen that this was a prank video chat, prank video call? I mean, you look at Vovon. I don't know if it was Vovon or Lexus, but you just look at the video of this prank call, and you can tell that these guys are in a skit, right? They're pranking you. they're punking you. They're pranking you, Fresh Prince Reza. But he didn't understand that. He thought this was actually a top German official. And Vovan Alexis talked about how Germany is now going to get involved in the war, and Fresh Prince Reza got very excited, and he talked about how the whole world should get involved in this conflict. And it really shows you how dumb Fresh Prince is. It really shows you how dumb this guy is. When he doesn't have a script handed to him from his puppet masters, he's pretty much clueless. So anyway, that is the video. I will end it there, theduran.locals.com. We are on X, we're on Rumble and Telegram. Go to the Duran Shop, pick up some merch. Some merch on the Duran Shop. The link is in the description box down below. I will see everyone tomorrow.